Okay. Good evening, everybody. I wanna talk about a topic that'll start off. It'll start off sounding a little bit dry, and a little bit like a Diana's topic, but as we'll see soon, that's not really what I want to focus on. But the pasuk says in Chamishi, Perek Chafes, pasuk says, "V'shochad lo sikach," right? Don't take bribes. "Ki ha'shochad ya'aver pikchim v'yisalef divrei tzadikim," because bribery blinds the intelligent, and it makes the words of the righteous become corrupted. I mean, that's not necessarily a translation for all the mafarshim, but approximately that's the translation. So Rashi already says this issur of taking shochad, of not taking bribery, doesn't mean what we think of as bribery. We think of as bribery that you have a judge, he's a little bit unethical, you pay him some money in an envelope, and he'll start to judge in your favor. Rashi already points out, it's based on the Gemara and Ksubos, that's not what it means. Rashi says, the shochad lo sikach, afilu lishpot emes. You're planning at being honest, right? The person says, "Listen, I want you to take this case pretty seriously. Here's $1,000. Put all your kofos into it." He's not telling you to judge in his favor. He's not telling you to necessarily go according to what he thinks. But he's giving you some money. Even that's Asur Midoraisa, says Rashi, "V'shochad lo tikach, afilu lishpot emes," even to have a proper judgment. "V'kol shekein lahatosin," and all the more so if you're planning on corrupting the judgment intentionally. "Shrei kedei lahatos es hadin, nemar kfar le'el lo sate mishpat." And as I said earlier, you can't intentionally corrupt a din. So obviously, that's Asur. What we're saying here is more than that. There's an Isser called shochad. Maybe bribery is not the right word. There's an Isser called shochad, which means even though your intention is to be honest, it's to be truthful, nevertheless, it's going to be usher. There is a whole more than daf in Ksubos, around Kuf Hei, Kuf Vav. I just want to read a little bit, not to spend too much time on reading inside in the sources, but I think it'll give us a sense of what Shochad is and try to get a sense of what it's all about, okay? So first of all, the Gemara starts off with what is Shochad, and it talks about what Rashi just quoted, even if you're not trying to intentionally corrupt the judgment. But the Gemara says, I'll have a couple of snippets. Says the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, "Ki ha'shochad ya'aver enei chachamim kal v'chomer l'tipshim." All the more so somebody who's not so wise. It'll corrupt his thinking. "V'yisalef divrei tzadikim kal v'chomer l'rishayim." The Gemara is wondering, what are we talking about? Who are these rishayim and these tipshim? What do we mean? "Midi tipshim v'rishayim b'nei din aninu." They're judging people? What does this mean? Ela, we're changing it a little bit. Halchik Amar, "Ki ha'shochad ya'aver enei chachamim afilu chacham gadol v'lokeach shochad." If somebody is a gadol hador, a huge talmid chacham, and he's taking some money on the side, "Eino niftar min ha'olam b'li smios halev." He's not going to leave this world without his heart being, I don't know how you say it, literally covered over, misled, corrupted, even unintentionally. Right? "V'yisalef divrei tzadikim," it's going to misrepresent the words of tzadikim. "Afilu tzadik gamar v'lokeach shochad eino niftar min ha'olam b'lo teruf das." He's not going to leave this world. He's not going to understand things properly. This idea of shochad, it literally makes him unable to understand things in the proper way. His mind is just clouded. His mind is corrupted. Okay, the Gemara continues. I mean, I'm skipping around. "Amar Rabba Barav Shila, hay don dina deshoil she'ilta." Let's say the following. You have a dina in the community, and there's somebody who doesn't have a hedge trimmer. He wants to go to his neighbor to borrow the hedge trimmer. Pasul lemeidan dina. He can't judge that guy anymore. And then he says, only if he doesn't have what to reciprocate, he has a lawnmower there. Okay, Lamaisa, we're expanding this idea of shochad. You can't even borrow if you don't have what to reciprocate. Then the Shulchan Aruch talks about the idea, it could be you can't accept gifts from people in the community, even though they don't have a judgment right now, or maybe at least a midus chasidus. But that's the idea of shochad. The Gemara continues. To talk about Tanu Rabbanan v'shochad lo sikach, eino tzarech lomar shochad mamon afilu shochad dvarim nami aser. He says, even if he's not going to give you any sort of money, he's just going to give you some sort of word. What does that mean? Well, what does it mean, words? Hechi dami shochad dvarim. Ki yad Shmuel havei over b'mabra. Shmuel was crossing in some sort of ferry crossing one time. Asa ahu gavra yoev le yadeh. Somebody came and helped him up. Amar le mai v'didech. Who are you? Where'd you come from? Amar le dina istli. I have a judgment coming up soon. Amar le pasil no lechaladina. Okay, I can't judge you anymore. I guess other examples. There was a meimar. He was sitting. He had a fly on his hat, and somebody came and shooed it away. Okay, I can't judge you anymore. Really incredible stuff. Earlier the Gemara says, Amar Rava, my time at the Shochta. What's this Svar of Shochta? This is going to be critical for our understanding. Kevin de Kabil le Shochad Midei, since we once he accepts Shochad, Ikriva le Daita le Gabeva Havi Kegufe. There's a connection that's developed here. Meaning, it doesn't seem like it should be too intense. You don't know the guy beforehand. He gives you a little bit of money, but you already feel connected. Vein adam roa chova le'atzmo. Wow, ad kedei kach. Once you've accepted money, you're on the same team. You can't judge objectively anymore. My shochad shehu chad. What does it mean, shochad? You are one. The two of you guys are one. And last story, then we'll move on from the Gemara in Ksubis. But the Gemara says, Rabbi Yishmael ben Rabbi Yossi havi ragil arisei de havi maisi lekomale shapsa kanta de peire. Rabbi Yishmael had a minhag that he had fields and he had sharecroppers. The minhag was, as part, I guess, the arrangement, the sharecropper would bring him a basket of fruits from the field every Erev Shabbos. Yomachada aisi le behebe shapsa. One week it turned out he brought it on Thursday. Amarle maishna ha'idna. Why'd you bring it on Thursday? Amarle dina isli. I have an issue in the basin. I figured I had to come anyway. But I mean, agav orchi aisi le lemar. I had to come to the basin anyway. I figured, instead of coming again tomorrow, I'll bring it now. Lo kabil meh. He didn't want to accept the fruits. Amarle pasilna lucha medina. He still didn't want to judge the case. Osiv zuza drabanan vekadainan le. He instead had other rabbanim take his place. Now, Bahari the Ka'azul Ba'asi, as he was walking around in the basin, Rabbi Yishmael, Amar Iba'itain Hachi. He's listening to the case, like, I hope my cropper guy, my sharecropper guy, says this. Iba'itain Hachi, now maybe you should toy in that. Amar Tipech Navsham Shel Makable Shochad, that the souls of those who accept Shochad should disintegrate, should disappear. Umani Shalona Talti, I didn't even accept these fruits. Vimnatalti Shalina Talti, if I would have accepted them, I'm entitled to them. I feel like my judgment and my vision is so clouded. So people who accept shochad achav kama v'kama. Okay, in the Gemara, if you want to see the whole Gemara in Kofei, it has lots of examples of the danger of shochad. Okay, so we're not ad kan shochad by dayanim, by mamonos, by the pasuk out of the pasuk. We're done with that for now. What I want to focus now for the next whatever it is, 25 minutes or so, is the idea of shochad in hashkafa and shochad in musar. There's a similar idea said by, both by Rav Dessler and by Rav Volbi, taking the idea of shochad to a different level, to a different perspective. What does it mean, shochad? Shochad means that the fact that there's a certain emotional, a certain connection between you and this random guy, from the fact that he's a nice guy to you, he gave you some money. So that kind of clouds your vision. You can no longer be objective about seeing things the way they really are. So we'll read a little bit from Alei Shur. The Mishnah Eliyahu says the same thing, maybe in a little bit more words. Says Alei Shur, says Rav Volbi, V'lo rak beis din hadvar mamurim. It's not only said legabe dayanim, al adam hu dayan b'inyan of hu. Every person is a dayan for his own life, his own matter, where he's going to learn, how he's going to learn, who he's going to marry, what he's going to study, what he does on his Friday mornings, what he does on Thursday nights. Everybody's making judgments for themselves. Kasheru tzarech lishkol keitzad lisnaheg, hu tzarech gamkein lishkol etat tzadim, v'lishpot im eze tzad ha'emes. Somebody who has a certain judgment, meaning judgment, he has an issue, he has to decide for himself something, he's at a crossroads, which happens literally many times a day. He has to decide what's the truth, which way is going to bring me closer to my ultimate goal. Umana said, what can we do? Tanu mishuchadim. We are bribed. We don't have a proper word necessarily in English. We have shochad on us. We are meshuchadim mihamidos vayitzarim shelanu hamatim et shikul hashikul letzad hanoach lahem ve'en lecha shochad gadol mizeh. So what's Rav Volbi saying? The fact that none of us are objective. We all have certain midos, and we're going to try to clarify what this means, give some examples of what this means, just to say it out, and then hopefully bring some more clarity to it. We all have things that we're not objective about. We all have certain yitzarim, taivos, or weaknesses. And when we have a certain decision to make, a lot of times, just like that, the judge, the dayan, who the fact that he's a little bit connected to one side because he got a little bit of money, we are often very much connected or pulled to a certain direction and don't even realize that we're very much not objective. I was thinking a couple examples of where this might come up. Okay, an example, again, people might see themselves more in one or the other or none of them, but you can think for yourself. Somebody says you get a WhatsApp from your friends from high school, let's get together on a Thursday night. They're saying it'd be really nice, and you think to yourself, I'm good friends with these guys. It wouldn't be nice for me not to hang out with them. And also, some of these guys I know, you know, we were close, and I helped them, and they could rely on me, and I could be like a shoulder for them to tell me their problems. It's really good for me to go. And the answer, so what is it? What is the right answer there? I'm honestly not saying it's definitely not to go, but the fact that we have to recognize in ourselves we are not objective, right? When we are making that decision, we often, A, it sounds like fun because learning is hard, and learning at the end of the week is even harder, and learning at night at the end of the week is even harder than that. And the fact that we could be with our high school friends and be relaxing and eating some fun food and doing some fun stuff, we have to realize that that is something that's going to blind us. We can't be truly objective. We really can't. We aren't able to make a decision without having this shokad, without having this thing that's blinding us from seeing things the way they really are supposed to be. Another example, somebody deciding, should I go to a certain co-ed camp, a certain co-ed program, a certain something, and thinking to himself, there's a lot of good I can do in this place, maybe I could contribute, I could gain, and that could very well be. And I'm not saying it's true or not true, right or wrong, we have to recognize that we are not going to be objective. We have a certain negia, we have a certain, I don't even know if there's a proper word, a certain interest, right, in leading us, pulling us in a certain direction. And that's the reality. Okay, one more example. You get to a certain place, and you really don't know anything about, and in Israel, hashkachas are so complicated, you're just hungry, you see a certain chocolate bar, has some weird Hebrew letters, it says something about kosher. You have no idea if it's kosher or not. But you start to tell yourself, well, I mean, mistama, something's here. So we are not objective. We have to tell it, we are not objective. We are being pulled in certain directions by the reality, by our taivos, by our desires. And that is the shokhad that we're talking about here. We are blind, just like shokhad blinds the die, and shokhad blinds us. We have decisions that are happening all the time. Okay, so how do we deal, what does this mean practically? How do we deal with this? That's beautiful. It's wonderful. We can't see reality clearly. We never know what we're really deciding. Okay, it's great. So what do we do about that? Okay, where does this lead us? So the first thing that Revolvi and Rav Dessler, I think, is one of their main approaches, besides obviously the whole idea of working on ourselves for 120 years, that's how we can eventually become more objective and see things more clearly, that's obviously true. But maybe the most important practical step is to appreciate that if we have an issue that seems like we don't really know which way we should be going, so talk about it with a friend, talk about it with a Rebbe, the importance of having guidance, because often, certainly a Rebbe, who has more insight hopefully, but even a friend will be more objective than we are about ourselves. Okay, but I want to take it also in a slightly different direction. I want to talk about a specific aspect of how we can work on ourselves, hopefully, to develop a certain clarity. So I want to talk about a Meshech Chochma in Parshas Vayilach, about a Gemara in Chagiga, about the idea of Hakel. What's the idea of Hakel? Hakel is that Shemitah, Motzei Shemitah, right, every 7 years, Sukkot's time. So there's a whole assembly, Am Yisrael comes to Yerushalayim after Sukkot, and the king comes and he reads from the Sefer Torah, reads from Sefer Devarim, and a lot of Musar, a lot of Machshava, and it's a very inspirational experience. Says the Gemara, Hakel es ha'am ha'anashim v'hanashim v'hatav. The Torah says, everybody should be gathered, the men, the women, and the children. Okay, one of the few mitzvot that's directly addressing also the children. The Gemara asks, im anashim ba'im lilmod, Nashim ba'os lishmoa, taf lama ba'im, the man can understand, this actually has to do a little bit with Ravishish here this morning, about different aspects maybe of Talmud Torah, and Nasev and Ishmael, maybe we could tie it into this. The men are coming to learn inherently, they could just be ma'ayin in the sugyas in Sefer Devarim. The women are coming to lishmoa, maybe to get some practical guidance. But taf lama ba'im, why are the kids coming? Why are you bringing the little kids to Yerushalayim? Taf lama ba'im, and it says the Gemara, kidei litein schar limibi'ehem, to give reward to the people bringing them. A little bit cryptic. It doesn't really seem to answer the question. He said, in order, just because. Okay? The Meshech Chochma doesn't give this explanation in so many words, but the chorus is what he's getting at. The Meshech Chochma quotes this Gemara in Chagiga, but he adds in some context. The Gemara says that this was a story with Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka and Rabbi Lazar ben Chasma, and they came to meet Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua told them, "New what you're in the base medrash." They said, "Rabbi, we want to hear from you. We don't want to tell you our chidush." He said, "No. Tell us what are you talking about in the base medrash?" So he said, "Well, we were darshening the whole idea of Hakia, and we had this idea that the man, the woman, and the children." And Rabbi Yeshua got so excited, and he said, "Margalis tova ha'isa biyatem. You had this beautiful diamond in your hands. Ubikashem la'avduyman. You wanted to take it away from me?" That's the Gemara. Says the Meshech Chochma, what was Rabbi Yeshua so excited about? So he says it could be, you can understand this in light of the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says about Rabbi Yeshua that when he was a little boy, he says, Zachar ani shaisa imo moletes arisaso lebeis hakneses, v'shvil sheyisdabku oznav b'divrei Torah. The story was about Rabbi Yeshua when he was a little kid. His mother would take him to the Beis Medrash. I don't know if you've ever seen these like little, you've probably seen these. They have the baby carriages that are like the lying down bassinet things. And some people have like the Rabbanim pictures as like the little things in the, you haven't seen this. Nobody's seen, has anybody seen this? Some people have seen this. Okay? So the idea, that was Rabbi Yeshua's childhood. When he was a baby, his mother would take him as his little baby, and she'd sit him in the Beis Medrash, and he would have no idea what's going on. Okay, he had no idea what's going on. But says Rabbi Yeshua, says the Meshachach, that's why Rabbi Yeshua got so excited about this idea of Hakel. So Ma, what's the Shaykhus? What's the connection? Lechora, what the Meshachach means is, what's the idea of Hakel? The kids are coming, we can currently be aimed to give schar to the parents, but what are they doing there? They can't understand. So says the Meshachach Machanami, they can't understand. But what they understand is they see these people, and everybody's so excited, and there's this king who's reading from a Sefer Torah, and people, they don't know, they don't get the message, but there's so many subtle cues they're getting here that's shaping the way they view the world, that's shaping the way they view themselves about what it means, what do we get excited about, and what's somebody that we're impressed by, and what's something that we have to prepare for. There are things they can't put into words, they can't even necessarily understand what's being said, but they're getting these very subtle messages. And the idea is the key to being able to be more objective. The key to not having so many things that are blinding our vision is to develop Yirat Shamayim, is to have an environment where we're surrounding ourselves with things that are pure, with things that are good. So we could say that's beautiful and that's inspiring, and Amir Sashem with my kids, I'll get that the Rebbe thing for the bassinet. But okay, we're already 18, 19, 20, 21. We grew up in a world that wasn't necessarily the same as Rabbi Yeshua's growing up. Okay, so as wonderful as this is, what do we do with this? Where does this bring us? Okay, so something very interesting. When my oldest was becoming close to teenagehood a couple years ago, so my mother-in-law got us this book, and it's called The Teenage Brain. Has anybody read The Teenage Brain? It's an interesting book. Interesting book. Okay, the gist of the book is that the teenage brain is unique. Okay, that's if you put it into a sentence. What does that mean, it's unique? We think of brains as we're born, you know, and we have hands that are really small, and feet that are really small, and heads that are relatively small, and then everything gets bigger, but the brain, does the brain really change so much? Okay, stomach, it fills in our skull as it gets bigger, but does it change? And the answer is yes, the brain very much changes. The brain is different as a child as to a 12-year-old, as a 12-year-old as an 18-year-old, 18-year-old as a 30-year-old, the brain changes. Actually, the way the brain is wired and the way the brain to somewhat functions, it changes. And what does that mean practically for the teenage brain? What it means is that when somebody's at the age of, I don't know, 13 to 22, whatever exactly the range is that the brain is making all sorts of connections about understanding the world and about the way that it processes information that it didn't really do yet, and it's not going to do as much later on. And again, there's actually a lot of technical, it's not so much like a popular, you know, like pop psychology book, there's a lot of technical information. I'll just read one sentence a little bit out of context, hope you'll give a little bit of meaning to what I'm trying to say. What this means is that memories are easier to make and last longer when acquired in teen years compared with adult years. This is a time to identify strengths and invest in emerging talents. And what the author is saying is that, and it says in many contexts in terms of the brain is sensitive, the teenage brain is sensitive, sensitive to alcohol, sensitive to drugs, sensitive to injuries, sensitive to all sorts of things that the adult brain is not. Okay, things are changing, things are developing, things are being molded at this age. Is the brain is literally changing. And the things that we are telling ourselves that we want to be good at, we want to invest our energy in, we want to be inspired by, we want to make memories with, so those things will stay with us more when you're 21 than when you're 40. That's the mitzvah of the brain. The brain is changing. So what does that mean for us? I haven't yet gotten to my point yet. I think what I've said so far, okay, maybe something insightful, but I haven't gotten to my point yet. What's my point? My point is that we live in a world that's true. A lot of what we've been exposed to, we've already been exposed to. Okay, a lot of what we've been taught from a little age about what our Shabbos table looks like, or how much to value sports, or how much, okay, that's the world that we've grown up in, for the better for worse, it's a wonderful place, but okay, we're not going to run away from the world that we came from. Okay, we can't, it's impossible, that's the world that shaped who we are right now. But there's a lot we can do right now, especially at your age, to help channel things in the right direction. I want to pick a couple examples. Let's think for a minute about the music that we listen to, okay? The music that we listen to. Is there anything usser about listening to music, let's say, with foul language? Is there anything usser about listening to music that has, I don't even know how you'd say it, maybe offensive imagery about relationships, or who knows, however you want to say it? So it could be yes. It could be there's certain things, if they're going to arouse inappropriate thoughts, that could be usser, okay? What about nivel peh? Is that usher? There's a famous Ramban al Torah in Parshas Kedoshim where he says there's the idea of Novel versus HaTorah. The Torah can only give you so many specific rules, and beyond that, the Torah is kind of saying, be a good person, be a holy person. I think one of the examples he gives is Nivel Peh, about speaking inappropriately, cursing, speaking in a very gruff, inappropriate way. Does that mean I can't listen to music where somebody's talking that way? I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not aware of a source that would clearly answer that. There's a Gemara that says if you're in the context with your friends and they're talking and they're being inappropriate, you should stop them. Does that mean I can't listen to some song that has like explicit lyrics? Is that still a thing? Explicit lyrics, like a label on the thing? Is there anything usher about that? I'm not sure. It could be yes. It could be we could figure out a way to find some way to sneak into some stiff in the Shulchan Aruch. Even if not, that's not the point. The things that we listen to, and I remember, you know, whatever, I forget what we were in, a mall or a restaurant, there was some song that came up, like a song from like my high school time, and my wife was like, I just wish I could get this out of my head, but it's part of my memory. Like these dumb songs, they're there. They're part of who we are at this point. The things that we expose our brain to, in terms of the music that we enjoy, that gets us going, that's fun, what kind of lyrics do we want to be shaping our brains? What kind of lyrics do we want to be, even subtly, like, it doesn't affect me, it does. The values that you're listening to, how women are treated, how you relate to money, and all sorts of messages that you're listening to, that shapes how we think, okay? I mean, very similarly, we're talking about things that we watch. Let's say, and I'm not talking about things that are explicitly usher. There's actually, right outside, right now, I did not plan this, but I think there's an article by whoever reads Hebrew, Rav Zamir Cohen from Hidavrut. Anybody see this? Shai, you know what I'm talking about? And in the board right outside, it was in last week's Hidavrut. I don't know if there's like a parallel in America, but it's a fascinating organization. It's a Baal Teshuva organization that actually has a cable TV channel where they have, I don't know if they have shows, they have interviews and whatever. It's interesting organization. So they have this weekly Alon, like weekly like Shabbos magazine. So there's a thing last week about the dangers of cartoons. Okay, I'm not saying I agree with everything he says. It could be he's making it a little bit too extreme. But even cartoons, you know, the cartoons of 2020 are not the cartoons of 1995. Things have changed. The world has changed. Does that mean that you can't watch cartoons? No, I'm not saying that. Certainly cartoons are a lot better than anything else that's going to be out there. But to appreciate that every little thing that we see, check it out. What are the messages here? What are the values that are being taught here? Just because something is not usher doesn't mean that it's good, okay? Let's say we're looking at websites, and again, I'm not talking about anything usher. I'm looking at a news website, and I know this one always has bad ads. This one has inappropriate ads. Okay, so we have to figure out a way. I'm not looking at them, though. I'm not trying to look at them. We have to realize these things that we see, even unintentionally, they we can't get them out of our heads afterwards. They're part of what's in us. They're part of what's shaping us. We have to be very sensitive to the things that we're exposing ourselves to. Especially, you know, this time of your lives, that as you're coming towards your time in Shalavim, towards your time after Shalavim, these are literally the most important decisions of your life. In terms of what profession you want to focus on, in terms of Mirat Hashem, the person you want to marry, where you want to live, how you want to raise your kids. And there's so many subtle issues in all these areas that we have to be sensitive to not being bribed, not having shochah, not being blinded. In terms of our profession, obviously money is important. You know, feeling like we're being productive is incredibly important. There's going to be all sorts of issues about how much time do we need to invest in my job. I have a friend who I think Bear Stearns is Olive Shalom, but back in the day he was a young guy in his early 20s. He was an investment banker, and he was making tons of money. And at a certain point, his wife made him quit. He would literally be called in, and sometimes after he came back from work at like 12 o'clock, come back in like in 2 hours, so we had to finish something. And he wasn't with his family, and he wasn't having a normal life. And people could very easily be led in a certain direction just for the sake of profession, for the sake of money. We shouldn't be blinded by what's good for us and what's not good for us. We have to be objective. This is the time to start working on those things. In terms of marriage, obviously looks are important, but is that everything? Meaning we have to make sure that our ikar and tefillah is in place, where to live. Remember, Nussbacher talking about, I think it was a couple years ago, maybe someone was in the crowd, I don't remember, but I think it was one of these like kind of discussions, but when people talk about that, I want to live in a community where I can have this kind of house. It's like, it's ridiculous. What do you mean you want to live in a community because you can have that kind of house? You want to live in a community because of the schools they have, because of the shows they have, because of the mitos of the people, and if it works out that it's a decent house, then mato, but to pick a community based on the real estate is like, it's ridiculous. It's crazy, but these very, and with kids, Every little thing, it's so many subtle messages that your kids are taking in from the moment that they're born about how you spend your time and how you talk and how you get upset and how you punish and how you, everything that, there's so many things about that we have to be so objective about and be so trained about doing things l'shem shemayim that this is the time to really be working on not getting these negios, on not getting these blinders that Shochet is all about. Okay? So in terms of, before I sum up, in terms of some practical things that I want people to take away from this, is be very sensitive about the music that we're listening to, be very sensitive about the books, the movies, the websites. I'm not talking about things that are usser. I'm talking about things that are not usser, presumably. But nevertheless, what are the values that it's putting into my head? How is it shaping my view of the world? How is it shaping my view of Torah, of mitzvos, of rabbanim, of who knows what it is? There's so many subtle messages we get from everything around us. We have to be very sensitive to all these things. Okay, just to summarize the idea of Shochet. So the Torah says, Shochet lo sikach, ki ha-shochet ya'aver pikchim mi'yisleif divrei tzadikim. And this means the idea of Shochet is not about taking money to judge incorrectly. That's obviously usher, and that's a separate isser. It could be included in this as well, but that's not what we're talking about in Shochet. Shochet means that I'm going to judge accurately. I'm going to judge truthfully. And the Gemara says, Rashi goes, that's impossible. It's impossible. Once you take in money from one side, you have a certain pull in a certain direction, and you cannot see anything objectively at that point. It's impossible. Right? The Gemara said, you're not even a Chacham Gadol, he's not going to be able to leave the world without being blinded. It's impossible. That's the idea of Shochet. It goes way beyond just deciding to favor one side. It's a subconscious. The Gemara seems to make it totally unavoidable once you've already been drawn towards one side. And the idea of Shochet goes way beyond Shochet of the Beis Din, Shochet of Dayanim, because as Rav Dessler says, as Rav Obi says, we are Dayanim for everything that we're doing. Everything we're doing, we have to judge for ourselves about what's good, what's right, what's the right decision to make about X, Y, and Z, which on the big scale, on the micro scale, and on the macro scale, every during the day about how I should spend my time, during break, during Seder, and bigger issues, what I should do next year, what I should do in the summer, what I should do beyond that. All those things that we have to realize that we have so many influences within us that pull us in all sorts of directions that are not necessarily l'shem shamayim. And we have to recognize that we are mishuchat, we're being bribed by everything around us, by the values that are not always the purest. That's the reality. It's impossible for them to be the purest. So what do we do about that? The most basic thing to do is to, if we feel like we're not sure, so get advice from your Rebbe, get advice from your friends. But the idea of working on a pure environment as much as possible. That story about Rabbi Yeshua, that since he was a baby, he was surrounded by Torah, surrounded by Kedusha, which is a beautiful image, but it's impossible for us to achieve that at this point. But that's the idea. That's the idea of Hakel. That's the idea. Tosla says in that Gemara, that's the idea of bringing kids to shul, assuming they're not going to make noise, but try to give them a little bit of that feeling, even from a very young age. And that idea, and what I was trying to say before, even at this age, it's not like it's too late. Dafka, at this age, our minds are being shaped and changed and molded in a way that's never going to be able to be recreated later on in life. This is one of the last stops as the brain is being significantly molded. So the messages and the values and the ideas that we put into our heads now are going to influence how we think and how we feel for the rest of our lives, literally. So especially now as we're thinking also about beyond yeshiva, about what we want to do, who we want to marry, where we want to be, it's so important to be able to try to, as much as possible, purify what we expose ourselves to. Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, we want our neshama, our bodies, to be a place for Hashem Shechina. We have to make it an appropriate place. It has to do with everything we expose ourselves to. And just to end with the idea that we're never going to be able to be perfect. We're never going to be able to avoid all sorts of foreign influences. There's a very interesting Kuzari where he says our entire schedules from morning every day until Shabbos throughout the year, there's different cycles of exposure. We're exposed to all sorts of stupid talk and all sorts of bad ideas. That's why we need tefillah three times a day. But after a few days, that's not enough. We have to have Shabbos. And after a few months, that's not enough. We have to have Yom Tov. We have to have Yom Kippur. We have to have Yom Noraim. But the idea that our life is always going to be exposing us to things that are not—we're not living in a bubble. We're not living in a world that's totally kadosh, because that's our world. Our world is not supposed to be that way. Our world is supposed to have challenges, but those challenges are going to expose us to all sorts of influences and challenges that we're not always going to succeed in. And our method, our point is not to be 100% successful with putting ourselves into a bubble that's going to be totally closed off from everything around us. That's impossible. That's not the ideal either. But at the very least, to be sensitive to what we intentionally put into our ears, what we intentionally put into our eyes and use our mouths for. That at least we can control to some extent. And Emir Hashem, like the pasuk says, like Shochad Yaver Yaver Nei Pikchim. So Hashem should be pokech, Ibrahim, Hashem should help us to open up our eyes, to take off those blinders, and at least if he sees that we're sensitive to this, and we're trying to be more careful about what we do, and how we speak, and what we see, and what we listen to, he should help us become closer and closer and purer until 120.